It was 2 Fridays ago, and Felicity, my younger daughter, and I had just walked Elizabeth, her older sister, to the bus stop. And Felicity and I had a good 45 minutes before we had to take Felicity here to CMO for preschool. So, uniquely, it was a Friday, my Sabbath, and I was in no rush. Felicity and I were sitting and eating breakfast at the counter, and we replicated a conversation we often have. She asked me, "What day is it?" "Friday," I told her, and she said, "Is it my another day of school?" "Yes, it's your another day of school." And we began to talk about school and what she was doing, and I told her when she asked me, "What was I doing?" I said, "Well, it's Mommy's Sabbath." "What's a Sabbath?" she asked me very quickly. I explained, "On Fridays, my Sabbath, I didn't work, and I tried to rest, just like God rested after making the world." And we began to talk a little bit about 6 days of creation and a day of rest, and Felicity said, "Yeah, God made the world." She paused. She said, "It took a lot of work, didn't it?" We continued eating our breakfasts. She turned and looked at me and she said, "Mommy, did you help God make the world?" I had to shake my head, "No." As we started to talk about perhaps there were no people and not even Mommy was present when God made the world, but Felicity continued and she said, "You really should have helped God out. It was a lot of work." On that morning, I found myself learning an awful lot about my youngest daughter, soon to be middle daughter, myself, and quite frankly, God. Perfect fodder for a Sabbath morning. I also found myself wondering how often I miss those conversations and those wonderings, because it's rare that we get 45 minutes to sit down to a nice breakfast at the counter. I wondered how often I don't smell the proverbial roses, missing the awe and the wonder that God offers quite often for me to contemplate. This morning is our last in a sermon series, All I Ever Needed to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten and Sunday School, and today we're talking about awe and wonder, contemplating these actions and parts of God's character that sometimes amaze us and sometimes confuse us. Robert Fulghum, the author of this book, suggests that the first place children cultivate wonder is this quintessential styrofoam cup that Joan alluded to. You know, the one where they plant the seeds and over time they water it, make sure it's in the sun, and they notice in class together, often writing it on the board. What do you see? The stem goes up and the roots go down as they care for it across days and weeks. It often unpacks questions of God's creation. How does this happen? They find themselves asking, and I think any one of us who has ever taught, raised children, or even watched children know this face. The face that happens when there's a puzzling around something as simple as a change of location or a newly found creature that crosses their path. Now, awe and wonder might not have been your first instincts this morning when you heard Fred read our gospel lesson. You might, like other readers of this lesson, have been confused, maybe a little frustrated, and quite frankly, ready to side with those earliest workers, the one who spent all day in the hot sun doing the hard work, wondering what exactly is Jesus trying to say here in this parable. The parable of the laborers in the field puzzles our sense of fair and confounds our reasonable expectations. So first I wonder, what if we considered renaming the parable? Instead of the laborers in the vineyards, what if we called it the conscientious boss, or the debate over a living wage? The complaining workers, they certainly did that, or the surprising salaries. I wonder how changing the name would give us a different context for what the parable is offering to us. Next, let me offer a bit of context that might be some further fodder for this wonder that we're trying to cultivate. So Jesus' listeners would have been familiar with this trope of the vineyard and the owner. This shows up in Isaiah and Jeremiah, and we know that often when a prophet begins to talk in this way, the listeners would automatically tune themselves to Israel and God. They knew what was being talked about. So the assumption was first that this parable talks about God. And I think it does. But every revelation of God's character calls you and me to a different way of being as well. It was just a little earlier in Matthew when Jesus told the disciples that every scribe who've trained for the kingdom of heaven is like the master of a household who brings out the treasure that is new and what is old, and the scribes are trained for this role. So in the scope of Jesus' own teaching, he's pointing not only to God as the one who is the master of the household, but the scribes and the disciples. I would say the disciples here in Westgrove who are gathered as well. But there are some curiosities, if you caught them, about this landowner whose title is probably properly translated householder. In the ancient world, it was rarely the big boss who went out to hire the workers for the day. That's really the work of a manager. And the hiring for the day was usually a once and done kind of event. It was given that the manager would know how much work there was for the day and gather everything needed in one visit to the Home Depot, not multiple visits for multiple employees. How unusual that this householder returns time and time again. And then there's the crux of this parable, the unusual way in which these folks are paid at the end of the day. It could have been that the householder called first those who'd been there all day and paid them first the usual living wage, called the ones who came next, and on down the line. They'd then have no idea that they were all paid the usual daily wage. It's clear in this story that the householder wants to make a point, to draw our attention, as well as the other laborers' attention, that something different is happening here. And this parable ends with a familiar proverb. I wonder how often you've heard yourself saying this. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Now, scholars have often told us that the proverb is kind of the punchline, the thing that explains the whole of the parable. I wonder if the parable is not an explanation, though, of the proverb. That is to say, I wonder if we aren't reminded again that God's ways are not at all what you and I have come to expect. So always God turning us right side up when we didn't even realize we were upside down? How often we miss the wonder and awe in our midst by the complaining, the grumbling, the recalculating what God ought to be doing right here in this place. God's ways, who are not like ours, and who calls us to widen our circles of grace and compassion. Instead of seeing wonder in what God's doing, I wonder how often you and I find ourselves in the place of cultivating envy instead of awe. Envy, even when we don't say a word, has a way of eating away inside of us, turning our hearts from amazement to callous disengagement, from the tenderness we want to offer to one another, to being completely detached. We always tell ourselves it's for our own protection. Instead of turning our eyes and our hearts to how God is making God's own self known, I think we sometimes find ourselves a bit bitter, perhaps a little unnecessarily self-centered, and certainly convinced that God is not at all concerned with what's going on in our lives. This year at our vacation Bible school, our children took a portion of one day to wonder a little bit about who God is and why God does what God does. They asked really great questions. They were on the wall for a while. Maybe you got a chance to read some of them, but a few of them caught my eye. They said, how did God decide what animal to make first? Good question. No idea. They ask, why is there sickness? What a tender question for our children to ask. They ask, will I get to see my pets when I go to heaven? Good question. And many, many more. I wonder if you haven't found yourself asking some version of those questions as well. In the stopping and wondering, those who were leading that vacation Bible school set of discussions helped our children to wonder about God's character, to cultivate some awe. Now, I doubt they used those words with the children, and yet they were teaching them all along. So what can we do? How can you and I cultivate this awe and wonder? I wonder if we can't find times to slow down, to listen to the wonderings of the children as well. I found this treasure in our parking lot one Wednesday morning. Can you tell what it is? This was after a rainstorm. No added addition from any human hands. The rain puddle has somehow made itself into the image of a duck. I was amazed. I had to take a picture and, of course, tell our duck teacher here at CMO as well. The outline of a duck in a rain puddle. As we contemplate awe and wonder how it is that God does what God does, we find ourselves in a different way of being. We also contemplate God's character. From our epistle lesson, Paul writes, probably straight out of prison, of this incredible character of God. Paul provides this great starting point for us and lifts up these wonderings. How can you live in Christ? How can you stand firm when things around you seem to be falling? And Paul gives us a glimpse of the God that he's come to know, the one that perhaps you and I have come to know as well. What might we wonder about? So on that morning 2 weeks ago, my conversation with Felicity went a little bit further, I have to tell you. Felicity wanted to talk about all the things that God had indeed made. So we took turns, naming sun and moon, grass and stars. And then we got to animals, a particular favorite in our house. And she stopped. She looked a minute and she said, "God made alligators and hippos, right?" I said, "Yeah, to the best of my knowledge." She said, "Well, I don't really like that." "Why is that?" I ask. And she told me alligators bite. "Okay." I said, "But you've never been bitten by an alligator, have you?" "No." She thought a moment. And then she said, "But I'm worried that God might have been bitten when God made the alligator." You see, wonder and awe moves us from envy and self-centeredness to compassion and to generosity, even wondering if God was bitten by an alligator in the whole creation process.